Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyCars.ie, low-cost car insurance specialists. See how much you can save at InsureMyCars.ie.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Fresh from a disappointing result last night is the only way I'll describe it. How are you, Ken?
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, disappointed, of course. You know, it's the first round of the World Championship qualifiers, and had a really tough match. Marco Fu, I mean, Marco was probably in the top eight players in the world at one stage, but since COVID, sort of lost his card and came back. But yeah, he played really well at the end. It was 6-6 at one stage. I was 6-5 up.
Yeah.
And now he rattled off some big breaks in the end and played. He was the better player, like, you know, so good luck to him.
Yeah, you played well yourself. I was watching it on YouTube, and you know, as you said, I mean, it was nip and tuck the whole way. I mean, it was evens all the way. He got to 6-6, and then, of course, as you said, he just got the breaks in those last couple of ones. He was going for a 1-4-7, I think, in one of the last ones as well.
He was in the last frame. He was got. Yeah, I think I lost it. Sorry, probably earlier on. You know, I had a 5-4 lead over after the first session and probably should have been 6-3. I lost two sort of black ball games that could have gone my way and would have made the difference, you know. So, and they come back, you know what it's like, they come back to haunt you, those ones that you missed and you feel you should have won, you know. And but he snatched them, and he just sort of took over in the evening time. He just played much better snooker in the end, you know. So it's disappointing, you know, it is, yeah. The World Championship, as you know, was like, I've got a great affinity with it here, you know, in Sheffield and the Crucible and that, and it'd be sad to sort of go out so early, you know.
Yeah, of course. For the listeners who don't really get it, I mean, these qualifiers, it's just enormous, isn't it? The numbers and the amount of games that are going on and people just battling to try and make their way into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, there's 144 players. The top 16 are already seeded through. So, you know, the 100 and whatever it might be that will qualify or try and qualify down to just 16 places. So it's a grueling sort of four rounds for some players.
Yeah.
Some players higher ranked come in, they might only have two rounds or three rounds. I would have had three rounds to play. But yeah, three best of 19s, you know, over the course of the week, it's quite grueling, you know.
It's a lot of, it's a lot of snooker. Like, I mean, best of 19, it's not a small, you know, get in and get out qualifying process, like the, you know, best of 13 or best of 15. Like, I mean, it's huge to get 10 frames. I mean, you're talking hours of play there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 10 o'clock in the morning, we finished at 2 and then we were back on at 7 and finished about 10 o'clock. So, yeah, there's a lot of snooker for a lot of players, a lot of frames and a lot of pressure as well, Reg. Yeah. You know, so. But everybody loves the longer frame matches, you know, and they all the players wanted to be. You went down to best of 11 at one stage, but then all the players wanted it back up to 19. They love the idea of playing longer sessions, you know, but it's quite a test mentally as well as physically, you know.
And do they have, are all the tables, like, is there a load of tables going on at the one time? Is it like an old school snooker hall of the past?
It's a big hall. It's held in the English Institute of Sport. It was a big, like, sort of basketball arena.
Right.
And all the tables, there's 8 tables.
Okay.
So it'd be all like, there's 2 TV tables and then there's like 6 outside tables. But yeah, it's done really, really nice. Like, it looks like a proper tournament you're going to, a TV tournament, you know, which is. And a lot of spectators as well. It's been very well attended by spectators. Yeah, it's a really good setup, you know.
Excellent. Okay, any young guns that we should keep an eye out for that you spotted over the course of time?
There's a few young guys that have qualified for the main tour next year. A young lad from Wales called Liam Davies who practices with Mark Williams in his club. He's going to be I think he's going to be a star of the future, you know, for the next, he's only about 18, but he's a tall lad, but he's a really very, got great potential. So I'll keep an eye on him over the next, he'll be on the main tour now. He'll get his chance on the main tour for the next couple of years. So he'll be one to look out for. Liam Davies is his name.
Yeah, okay, we'll keep an eye out for that. So, well, it'll be, I'm really looking forward to it. It starts on the 20th, doesn't it? The
20th, yeah, Saturday the 20th, so this day week in the Crucible. The draw will be done next Thursday, and then it's 17 days, Red, 17 yeah. days to Bank Holiday Monday to the 6th of May, I think it is, till the final. Luca Brasil is defending it,
yeah,
and no first-time winner has ever actually defended the title.
There's
only myself
and
Joe Johnson who has actually got to the final the following year.
Yeah.
So his form is not great.
Okay.
But you know, although he lost in the Riyadh Masters final about a month ago, but other than that, he's had a pretty poor season. He had one final in Shanghai, that was at the beginning of the season. So the omens don't look good for him. But you never know when he gets there. He could produce the same, hopefully the same magic that he did last year. It was quite an incredible win for him last year, you know.
Yeah, and of course Ronnie, as always, would be the favourite, but there'll be plenty of others pushing him for that. Who do you think has got the best form at the minute aside from Ronnie?
Well, I like Mark Williams. I mean, he beat Ronnie last week,
that's right,
in the Tour Championship, won 7 frames in a row against him. I mean, he's looking really good, and he's won it 3 times before, so he's got the course and distance runner, you know, and he's got confidence now after beating O'Sullivan, so that will stand to him. He was 40-1, I think, at one stage, but I'd say he's cut right down now after beating O'Sullivan last week. O'Sullivan and Judd Trump, I would say Mark Allen, you'll have to put in there as well as a possible chance. He's had a very consistent season, but the outstanding performance this year being Judd Trump and Ronnie O'Sullivan.
Okay, right, well, we keep an eye on it. Looking forward to that starting next week now, I have to say, and looking forward to all of your coverage as well. Last week we were talking about it beforehand, we just dip back into it again a little bit. I suppose from a United point of view, you'd probably consider it a good result, 2-2, but at the same time, being 2-1 up, penalty, Salah, 2-2, I mean, the Liverpool match was one that they would have been worried about, but what did you make of the performance?
I thought it was a great game, to be honest. Yeah, very open game, very similar to the FA Cup. Liverpool had a lot of the play, possibly, you know, it's a bit like the FA Cup, really. They could have scored a few more goals, just being sort of wasteful in front of goal. But I thought United's goals were great. I mean, Fernandes' goal was a cracker, you know, just the way he took it first time over the keeper. A mistake, obviously, from the defender, but still a great execution from Fernandes with skill. And then, of course, Maynard's goal was a classic as well. For such a young player, he's had a really great season, you know, and he can score goals and he's so classy on the ball. So that was a great... But United, you know, their failings keep coming back to haunt them. You know, the penalty against Chelsea, you know, in the last couple of minutes. And then the penalty, you know, from Bissaka. There was no need to dive in there, Reggie. I mean, it was a ridiculous challenge, you know. And another penalty given and more points lost, like, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's frustrating when you see it like that. But I suppose Liverpool would have come in as heavy favourites to get the results. So, you know, you'll take the draw. I know as an Arsenal fan, I was delighted with the draw. That suited me incredible. I preferred the win. But, you know, a draw, we'd take that, no problem at all. Did you get to any of the Champions League during the week? Did you watch the City game?
Oh, it was fantastic. Amazing. Amazing football.
Unbelievable. The strike from Valverde for the equaliser for Real Madrid. I've never seen, like, I mean, I'd say if you could put 100 crosses in there like that, he'd miss 99 of them compared to that one strike. It was incredible.
Rose Ed, probably 99 of them. No, it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, the skill factor, even Foden's goal was a great goal as well, you know, to go 3-2 up. Now, I thought, yeah, it was a fantastic game. Great quality, great skill from both teams. And, you know, still quite open. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, Real came to the City ground and played just as well. I know City will be favourites now. But, wonderful, wonderful game of football.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another wonderful game of football at the at the Emirates as well.
Absolutely.
Between Arsenal and Bayern. I mean, what a game that was, you know?
Incredible, yeah. Like your match with Fu in the first stages, it was nip and tuck all the way. You couldn't really tell which way to go, and they did well to actually get back and get the equaliser, I thought, you know? So, it was a good game, and it teased
penalty
it up nicely for the next round.
Penalty or no penalty, right?
Oh, it was a penalty, yeah.
Penalty.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No comment, I think, was the best
ball? What about the handball, though? Did you see that?
No.
You didn't see the ball? Now, when the keeper passed it to Gabriel and he picked it up and then placed it on the six-yard box. You never saw that?
No.
The referee blew his whistle. It was a goal kick. Mm. The keeper passed it to Gabriel.
And he picked it up.
He picked the ball up and put it on the corner of the six-yard box to kick it out himself. Mm. It should have been. And the referee said, I'm not giving a penalty for that because it was a childish mistake.
I agree with the referee. He's right. Yeah, he's right. Yeah,
he's right. Yeah, he's right.
Of course. He knows what he's at.
That's exactly what he said.
Let's get on to the golf.
Okay.
The Masters.
Moving swiftly along.
Much more important. Let's move very swiftly along. Did you? Obviously, we were watching bits of it, but Rory struggled a little bit. Weird weather-wise. You know, the first day...
It was, wasn't it?
They were banging in chips from everywhere on the first day. They were, it just seemed, you know, this is easy. And then yesterday, the wind and everything else, scores getting destroyed. Like, Hovland was at one stage, I think, was 4 or 5 under. He went out to 1 or over or something, I think, by the end of it. Like, it was incredible swings. Danny Willett on the 18th. There was loads of different things. But Rory is struggling a bit.
Rory's struggling, yeah. His chipping, compared to, like, Scheffler, I mean, his driving is still great. There's no doubt about it. But his iron play and his wedges, compared to Scheffler, who's, like, number one in the world, he's not, he's miles behind. You know, Scheffler's getting it close. He's so consistent. But Rory is just, for all his talent, that's what's letting him down. I mean, if he could chip as well as Scheffler, he'd be winning these tournaments, hand over fist, no problem whatsoever. He's just not as consistent. And with the putter as well, he gets the putter in the sand. He's just no putts dropped for him yesterday whatsoever. But it was in very, very testing conditions, you know what I mean? So,
but Scheffler is...
Very, very difficult for all the players,
Scheffler's on a different level at the moment, though.
He's unbelievable.
His consistency, and he never seems to panic, and he hits a bad shot and it might go into the bunker, or he hits a bad shot, to a difficult angle back into the green, and everyone, you're listening to Butch Harmon and all these talking about, oh, this is a really difficult, and the next thing is he stitches it to within 2 feet and you're going, this is he never seems to panic, he just seems to have it the whole time. I notice there's 3 of them there on 6 under, home at DeChambeau and Scheffler, but of those 3, you have to feel Scheffler is the best positioned, coming in, you have to feel that at DeChambeau, anything can happen. One of those mad drives that he does could be gone. Homa doesn't have the experience, you feel, of being in that position. And it's hard to see where the other... Well, I suppose the weather will have a lot to do with over the next couple of days, but it's hard to see where the rest of the challenge is going to come from the rest of the field, isn't it?
Yeah, but you never know. Mm. You just never know at the Masters, because there's always going to be a boy. So Morikawa is up there. He's on 3 under. Wouldn't be surprised for him. Delighted for Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
I think it's 25 cuts in or 26 cuts in a row. He's broke the record at the Masters, which is fantastic.
I think it's 24. Was 23, and I think this one is 24. So incredible.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's just an amazing record for a man whose body is sort of broken. After the crash and everything that he's gone through, to be able to still, go through those testing conditions, walk that course, which is very, very hilly. It doesn't look like it on the TV, but it's a very, very hilly course. And to be able to still produce great golf, it's just a testament to the guy. He's just such a legend, But my money's on Max Homa at 50 quid at 80 to 1 reg. So I'll be sweating over the weekend.
That's for sure. Yeah, that would
really
be a lovely one.
I'll be glued to it. Absolutely glued to it. But I'm delighted Larry made.
I was just going to say that
as well. Delighted with him. He did really well to finish the last 6 holes. I think 1 under to make the cut. So it's going to be good to see him back in there. And but don't be surprised from someone low down in the field or middle field will make a bit of a charge and still be in the hunt,
It's a packed weekend this weekend, obviously, with so much sport going on. But it's time to turn our attention to rugby now, and I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Irish Independent and left-wing podcaster Will Slattery. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Doing well, thanks, Reggie.
That's good to hear, I have to say. Yeah, it's a pretty action-packed weekend of rugby, no question about it. I suppose if we start with the Women's Six Nations, interesting turn of events, I suppose, is how I'd describe it, seeing that, Cliona Maloney was brought back into the squad. I suppose for some, they may have thought maybe she might be starting, but it seems like a bench spot at this stage. What do you make of that whole debacle? I mean, I know she's been out for 2.5 years, I think it is, playing since she last played for Ireland, but it's almost a return of the prodigal, isn't it?
Big time. Like, it's, as you mentioned, it's almost 3 years in the wilderness for a player who, you know, was a key component of the team at the time. Obviously, probably everyone knows by now, she made critical comments about the then women's director of rugby, Anthony Eddy, over his comments kind of blaming the players for not qualifying for the World Cup. She said he was spreading slurry, and she was basically then disappeared from the squad despite the fact she was playing in the Premiership in England and playing really, really well. And Greg McWilliams maintained that it was a form selection, which was always kind of hard to tally considering she was playing really good rugby. So now she's back in the team. I think it's great to be able to kind of close that chapter and turn the page of what was like not a nice episode in Irish rugby. Just bringing her back in, as you said, onto the bench. I'm sure if she plays well, I think she'll be in the starting team. As Scott Beaman wouldn't have any kind of preconceived, I would have thought, issues with her. So I think it's great. I think, as I said, it's going to be able to kind of put that episode to bed, because like the kind of excluding a player or seemingly excluding a player based on those comments, I think it is wrong, because she was pointing out, I think, I say, a very widely held belief in the squad and in the general public.
Absolutely, of course it was wrong, and there's no question about it that caused the exile. But you have to admire, or do you, Scott Beaman, for being brave enough to make the decision to take her back in? Because let's face it, it's hard going against what maybe your employers might be thinking, or the way that they went down that road.
Well, the IRFU maintained that like they had nothing to do with them, and that it was Greg McWilliams' decision. Like, so, you know, perhaps that was the case. Perhaps Greg just thought, okay, it was a disruption that I don't want. I'd rather like kind of build a squad with, you know, new people or without that distraction. Which, you know, ultimately that's his decision. I don't think it was the correct one, because I think she was playing well. But if that was the case, then Scott Beaman does probably know. I would be surprised if the IRFU were kind of saying, oh, we don't want her. And like, ultimately, it wasn't as if she said something like outrageous. Like, oh, she said he was kind of talking out of his ass, you know, or whatever you want to say. Like, and yeah. I think Scott Beaman has made the right decision. I think it's a no-brainer. She's playing well. The team needs good players in it. You know, they need to get a win today. That's the most important thing. Does Cliona Maloney help that? Yeah, I think she does.
Yeah, okay. Well, as you said, let's move on from that and talk about the game itself. I mean, they need to get a win, exactly right, because let's face it, they were expected to get a win against Italy, and they didn't. Now, they didn't probably through mistakes on their own part. They didn't execute when the times were crucial. But Wales would be another team that, let's say, they would have been targeting pre-competition. So again, at home, crucial that they do get this result and get it across the line.
Massively, I think this is a huge game in the team's development today. As you said, like, opening game against France, they were never going to win, but people were reasonably pleased with the battling effort they showed. You know, they scored 2 tries. They limited France to, you know, what was it, in the high 30s, which was a massive improvement on last year. Italy, as you said, the game was there for the taking. It was just their own handling errors at crucial times. Like, they left at least 2 tries out on the pitch from like very simple errors. So if they fix those errors, they should be winning today. Wales are probably one of the weaker teams in the competition along with Ireland. So I think it's very important to stop this losing run, to get a little bit of momentum. Like, no one was expecting Scott Beaman to come in and immediately have them competing at the top of the tournament. But I think the Italian performance showed, like, those handling errors aside, that this Ireland team are improving. And I think they will win today. But I think it's vital that they get that win, just to kind of, you know, to cement the positivity that's kind of come with this new era. You need to get the wins as well. So I think they will win today. Yeah. And I think it's important that they do.
Yeah, I mean, on that point that you made there, I feel very similarly. Regardless of the results, I mean, France was never going to happen. England is always going to be a very tough game. Italy was one of those things. It does feel, though, even with the results that they got in both of those opening two games, it does feel that the team have progressed and they are going in the right direction and that their confidence is building and that there is still a lot more to come from this team.
Yeah, I agree. Like, as you know, we touched on it a lot, but getting some of those seven players back involved not only improves the performance of the team, but I think it's good for morale. It shows that the 15s team is a priority, and I think that's important. This is for the message it sends to the squad themselves, for the message it sends to the wider public. They have tickets to sell for three home games. They obviously have already played one, but you know, you're not going to get people buying tickets if they know that the team is missing some of the biggest stars that the team has. So I think that's very important. And yeah, like winning this builds momentum for that other Scotland game at home, which you'd expect that they'd have a good chance of winning that too. Like, if they can finish this Six Nations tournament with two victories, a close defeat to Italy, a good performance against France, and then, like, I'm almost going to discount the England game because they're so far ahead, that will definitely be a good step forward for this team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we shall see how it goes and wish them the very best of luck in that game, which kicks off today at 4:45 and should be a good one to watch, albeit it does clash, which is a bit of a strange one, with the Leinster game at 5:30. So there'll be people watching the first half maybe and switching over. I think that was a bit of a bone of contention as well, Will, for a few, wasn't it? The fact that it clashed.
Yeah, like, I have some sympathy. Like, they're separate tournaments. Like, it's the La Rochelle Leinster game. That's kind of the marquee slot this weekend for I think audiences, especially for a game in Ireland. We don't like to go for 8 o'clock kickoffs. I think people prefer that kind of 5:30 window. So I have a bit of sympathy. Like, there's a lot of competitions. Like, it is hard to kind of get it all right. But very disappointing, as you say. Like, there's not that many windows for the women's team to get that kind of showcase.
Yeah.
This was one of them. And as you say, like, realistically, Leinster La Rochelle is such a big fit. Sure that a lot of people who might maybe watch the first half, as you said, will probably switch over, which is a shame.
Absolutely. Okay, on to the Leinster game, as mentioned there. Huge game for Leinster. A lot of very, very nervous Leinster fans. I've been talking to them all week. Ron O'Gara doing his absolute brilliant best again to take the narrative in a different direction, let's say, and bringing his La Rochelle team to Cork and embedding them in there and getting every Munster supporter behind them for this game. So it's got to be an interesting one, but I'm very nervous, I have to say. Like a lot of the fans, I think Leinster will get the job done. I do think they will win, but it's going to be a very, very tough one. And in particular, the two changes surprised me with Will Connors and Jason Jenkins coming in. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it just shows that they've thought about this La Rochelle game as a specific challenge that requires specific skills. I feel like if they're playing Toulouse, say, in the quarterfinals, I don't think this was the team that would have been picked. Like, they've added Jason Jenkins in for that extra beef instead of Ross Maloney, and Will Connors is back in for his chop tackling that he played really well in that game in December. Now, he hasn't really featured that much in the big game since, which shows that they've kind of been just keeping him in reserve almost for this challenge, because there's no doubt that Skelton, Antonio, Aldred, Dante, these big ball carriers have had a lot of impact against Leinster. So if Connors can kind of cut them down early and not let them get up momentum, that's a massive kind of negation of one of their key areas of strength. I do like the team selection, I must say. Like having Van der Fleer and Jack Conan to come in off the bench, all of a sudden that makes it a really formidable weapon in the second half. If Connors can, as I said, kind of keep some of those powerful ball carriers at bay, and then Leinster can spring off Jack Conan, who's playing great rugby, Van der Fleer, who played really well off the bench in December in La Rochelle, that's a major weapon. And like, on the flip side of that, like, La Rochelle are missing a couple of key players who've been really effective against Leinster. Like, Brees Doolan is a huge loss. He's on the backfield in all of these games against Leinster. Like, any time Leinster kicked the ball, his awareness has been so good, and his clearing kicks have been so relieving. Him missing, I think, is massive, and they're missing a couple of front row players like Pierre Burger-Reed and Red Awardy. Not only robs them of two key starters, but it kind of weakens their overall bench impact as well, because they're going to have to press those guys in from the off. So, and La Rochelle aren't playing great rugby either, and they've traveled from Cape Town. Like, there's a lot of variables in this game. I can understand the nerves obviously come from the fact that Leinster have been beaten 3 years in a row by the same team, so it's natural to be apprehensive. But taking it in isolation, I don't think La Rochelle are coming into this game in as rude health as they have been some other fixtures.
I've heard a few supporters, I'd interested to get your opinion on this, a few supporters saying to me that this is, you know, not as good a Leinster team, inverted commas in my mind, but not as good a Leinster team as the ones that in the past took on La Rochelle and lost to them, yet we're going in feeling more confident about beating them, then that those two don't add up, those two sides of the equation. So do you think that's a fair comment, that maybe this isn't as good a Leinster team as played them in the past? Or is that just the Johnny Sexton factor again?
Well, no, I think that's a fair comment. Like, you're looking, they're missing Gary Ingrose and James Ryan, first and foremost. Sure. That's two nailed-on world-class starters who have been very influential in this Leinster team. As you say, Johnny Sexton is gone. I know he didn't obviously play in the final last year. But the Leinster haven't been playing great rugby this season compared to what they would have been at this juncture maybe the last 2 years. I don't think they have been as good this year. So, I can take that point. It's kind of a funny one that you're still kind of confident. But I suppose the confidence just comes from like some of the factors I listed there around La Rochelle. Like, La Rochelle were so good the last 2 years, or 3 years rather, than beating Leinster. If they're not as good themselves this year, that kind of doesn't mean, that means that Leinster's maybe slight drop off isn't quite as big a deal if La Rochelle themselves aren't quite as good. And like, the Aviva Stadium factor is important. I know La Rochelle did beat them there in May, but it's still a major advantage to have that game in Dublin at home. Yeah. There's going to be a full house today. There's going to be a rocking atmosphere. So I actually agree with that. I don't think Leinster are as quite as good at this stage of the season as they have been in years past, but I don't think that means that they'll lose again. I think they'll win today, but I did think that before the other match as well, and I was wrong. So that's why it's so exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're really looking forward to it. Can't wait is the honest thing on that one, because it really is going to be a cracking match and one to be glued to a little bit later on. In the other games as well, point of note, disappointingly, the Bulls have sent over a second string team to play against Northampton. And you kind of go, why are you even in the competition when you're going to do things like this?
I agree. I think it's shocking. I understand that there's travel. You know, it's like, you know, they played in Pretoria last weekend. They're going to be in Northampton on Saturday, and they have Munster next weekend back in Pretoria. Like, that's a ridiculous travel schedule. And the week before they played Lyon in Pretoria, they were back in Europe again. Like, that's an outrageous amount of travel. Like, that's not good for your body, your mind. It's not good for preparation. You're getting very little on pitch time. Jake White's obviously decided they have a better chance of winning the URC, which they do, like, because they could end up getting second place there. So, but it's shocking with the competition. It's never happened that in a knockout game, like whatever about a pool match that like a French club has, you know, changed things, for a knockout game for them to leave like 10 or 12 Springboks at home, it's awful for the competition. It will call into question their participation, I think, generally. I don't think it makes sense for them to be in the tournament, at least in the URC. It's 2 week blocks. It's not quite as disruptive. To have to go like up and down between South Africa and Europe is not feasible on a 1 week notice. It's not fair for La Rochelle to have had to play in Cape Town and come back up. I don't think I'm playing another game in Europe this week. And like, they've added a lot to the URC. I just think logistically, I don't think it makes a huge amount of sense. And like, it's just an awful look for the competition that in the quarterfinal the Bulls have basically rolled over and said, we're not going for this.
Okay, we turn our attention to golf now, and of course, a little bit of a competition going on across the water there in the States, but not too many people watching it. I don't think it's that popular at all, as Johnny McCann from the Bogeyman podcast will tell us. Johnny, isn't that correct? The Masters, it's only a bit of a Mickey Mouse event, really, isn't it?
Oh yeah, sure it is. No, it's the biggest week of the year for, especially, I think for myself, it's my favorite golfing tournament. It's one that I grew up watching. Yeah, I've got so many memories watching the Masters, and particularly kind of around Amen Corner. I think any kind of golf fan knows the Masters and knows Augusta, because it's the only major that's on the same golf course every single year, and it's iconic.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. It's funny because I was watching it last night, and my 11 and 12 year old came into the room, and all of a sudden they're sitting down watching it with me, and they're asking me about, well, what do the numbers on the right mean, and why has that got a 71 and he's got a 10, and the interest was there, and suddenly they were sitting down for an hour and a half glued to with me. So I mean, there's something about the Masters more than any other competition. Maybe it's the way they televise it, maybe it's the colours that are so vibrant around the course itself, the numbers of patrons, as they call them, although I hate that word, that go along and look at it, and the just the unknown of the Masters, because every single shot can end up in disaster or be brilliant. It's just an incredible tournament.
It really is. And actually, you talk about watching the Masters there with your children. The beautiful thing about the Masters really is you'll probably be watching those same golf holes with your children for the next 20, 30 years. And yes, I think that's why Augusta is iconic. It's like I said earlier on, the only major in the same golf course every single year. And that's why whenever we watch it, we see, you know, not to miss on the right-hand side of the hole on 12. If you want to go to 16, where Tiger Woods hit the chip, that chip is an impossible chip. I was talking to a few journalists who have played the golf course, and everyone knows it likes to hit that skim shot across 16, across the water. Hmm. But a colleague of mine told me that he wanted to go to the position where Tiger Woods hit that chip on 16, where there was the iconic, the ball rolling in, the Nike logo stopping on the edge of the cup and then just falling in. And he was saying that he stood there and that was an impossible chip. Yeah. And that's what's great about the Masters is we know these golf holes. We know certain holes. We know when you watch at 17, you know not to miss long right on Nandina. You know that if you miss left on 2, you're in so much trouble. It's the same things every single year that you just don't get when it comes to the Open Championship, the US Open or the PGA. As incredible as those major championships are, there's something a little bit more about the Masters.
Absolutely. Well, you say it's the same thing every year, but I have to say I watched it last night with stuff I'd never seen before. Sandstorms blowing across the 18th into Tiger Woods' face. The wind was appalling yesterday for those players. But it hasn't put some of them off. And Scottie Scheffler, just incredible what he's doing at the moment, how cool, calm and collected he seems to be. DeChambeau hitting those big mammoth drives. I think he hit one nearly 400 yards there yesterday with the wind behind him. It was absolutely incredible. He had like a little wedge shot in onto the green from that. And Homa kind of coming out of nowhere as well with a very good performance. I feel personally it's Scheffler's to lose. I know there's a long, long way to go in this competition, but with the form that he's in at the moment and the confidence that he has, the others could slip up. I just don't feel that he will. Am I wrong in thinking that?
I think you're pretty much on the money there. I think there are three certainties in life at the moment. That's death, taxes, and Scottie Scheffler winning golf tournaments. He is just too good at the moment. His ball striking is clinical, and I think it was most evident when he was playing against Rory McIlroy. Rory is obviously struggling a little bit at the moment with the left miss, but there were a couple of holes where Rory and Scottie were in the same place. Rory's airmailed the green, he'd miss it long, and Scottie would put the ball pin high, 8 foot away from the hole, 10 foot at worst. And that for me just summed up the difference between Scottie Scheffler and everyone else right now. As wind conditions got up, like it was 20 mile per hour winds with 40, 45 mile per hour gusts. Mm-hmm. So it's some of the windiest that I've ever seen it or I've ever heard of it being at Augusta. And yeah, it looked difficult for Scottie, but it looked a hell of a lot more difficult for everyone else. And I think if he can control his ball flight, as he has been doing so well for the first two rounds, I agree, it's his to lose. I really like Bryson DeChambeau. I think him shooting that 65 in the first round was some of the most impressive golf that I've seen around Augusta. He managed to hold on to it, obviously shooting one over 73 in the second round, but I think they're two very different styles of play between Scottie Scheffler and Bryson DeChambeau. But Bryson seems just a lot more mature than he has in previous years. Mm. And I hope he gets it, to be honest with you. I think he'd be a good winner for this generation of golf fan.
Absolutely. Okay, well then finally, just, you know, you're talking about this generation, but we have to mention the last generation, Tiger Woods. Qualifying, is it the 24th cut in a row breaking the record? Absolutely incredible stuff, considering what he has to endure from an injury point of view.
Yeah, that's it exactly. His 24th consecutive cut at the Masters. He's now tied for 22nd place. That sounds a lot further away than it probably is on the weekend at the Masters. So he's one over, so he's 7 shots back of the leaders. But Tiger even said in his post-round press conference, anyone who's in the weekend, yeah, this weekend has a chance to win it. And to be honest with you, would you put it past Tiger to win a 6th green jacket? I certainly wouldn't. He looks in pain. Yeah. I've been glued to the television, as you can imagine, over the last 2 days, and will continue to be over the weekend. But I was watching the Masters breakfast on Sky Sports the other day, and Tiger walked from his car to the range. And he looks laboured. He looks like he's in a considerable amount of pain, as you can imagine he would. A back fusion, a fusion on his ankle, pins everywhere in his body. He's to be able to actually walk and compete at the level of golf that he competes at in itself is an own like human medical feat.
Yes.
And to be winning and to be competing at the Masters would just be it would be the comeback of all comebacks. Absolutely. Even after what happened in 2019.
Oh, it's time to turn our attention to GAA. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by the one and only Sean Lane. Good morning, Sean. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. I'm good. Yourself?
Wonderful. No, never better. Enjoyed a lot of what was going on last weekend in the GAA. But of course, there's two great Camogie National League finals on it this weekend.
Absolutely, Reggie. And the first one, the 1A final, Galway versus Tipperary. New kind of territory for Tipperary, Reggie. They won it in 2004. So it's 20 years since Tipperary won it. They did contest the final since then. 2009 against Wexford, unfortunately came up the wrong side of it. They've got to the final, Reggie, at the hard way. They went to Cork, who are the All-Ireland champions. They were a goal down with time up and they got two late goals. But they also beat Galway in the second round of the round robin, 3-10 to 1-13. So they've got there the hard way. There's some great players with Roisin Howard, Caoimhe McCarthy, Eamonn McGrath in particular. The day that they beat Galway, where they scored 3-10, she scored 3-7. So she's one to look out for. And Karen Kennedy as well. Some really players. They've a great chance. People are saying Galway are the favourites. We'll see. On the other side, look, this is Galway's third league final, Reggie, in a row. They've won the last two. They've won two All-Irelands in the last 4 or 5 years. They're backboned by the McGrath sisters from Sarsfield, Siobhan and Orla. They've Aoife Donoghue in the middle of the park, and they've also Kerry Dolan. So they're a star-studded team. I kind of expect Galway might just get over the line, Reggie, just from the perspective that they've played 5 or 6 times in Croke Park, and plus the Sarsfields girls as well would have played a couple of club finals there. They won one to Owlert and lost another one. So I just give them the edge on that. The second one, Reggie, is the one that's closest to heart. It's Dublin versus Wexford. They met in the very first round in Owlert and Abala, and Wexford won the game 215 to 17 points. But it was a real early start to the season. Wexford got two goals early on, Emma Tompkins and Kate Kirwan, and that was the difference between the two teams. Having said that, Dublin went on a roll after that, Reggie, four wins in a row, and particularly the one I went over to see was the Limerick game. Dublin were very, very impressive in that. I believe there'll be absolutely nothing in this game. That game is on this evening at 2 o'clock in I call it Carlo IT, but I think it's Southeastern Technical University now, or Technological University, at 2 o'clock, and we're genuinely hoping to get a great Dublin support, young boys and young girls down to support them. But two great finals to look forward to today and tomorrow, Reggie.
Absolutely. And the Friends of Dublin as well.
Yeah, they were just on to Maurice Scully was on to me. Huge game for Dublin and indeed Wexford next weekend, Sunday the 21st. Dublin travel to Wexford to play. The bus leaving at 10:30 from Bossaras. It'll make one stop at the Cornell's Court Shopping Centre. Tickets for members are €15, €20 for non-members. If you book early is Maurice's request on 087 720 5887. I'll just give you that number again, Reggie. 087 720 5887. They do a smashing job for Dublin Hurling, supporting to all these away games.
Absolutely, and that support well needed. Okay, it's time to turn attention to the Leinster Football Championships now, quarter final time, and delighted to be joined on the line by Brian Talty. Good morning, Brian, how are you?
Good morning, Reggie, how are you?
Oh, never better, I have to say. Cracking weekend of sport going on all around the place. Wicklow and everything.
Absolutely.
Around.
I was just going to say, you're looking forward to Wicklow and Carlow. Wicklow and Kildare.
Wicklow and Kildare. I don't know if looking forward is the right word. I think it's been, 1995 since we won back-to-back matches against each other, but you never know. I know Kildare were down in Fowd Island doing a bit of training, so I think we were down in Powers Court.
Brian, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
Well, we'll actually start on that game. So Oisin McConville's Wicklow had a real surprise beating Westmeath the last day. Kildare, look at, Glenn Ryan, probably one of the great Kildare footballers of all time, going through a really bad patch. Didn't get a point, I don't think, in Division 2. How do you see this game going?
Sean, they had a disastrous league campaign, you know, it was 7 defeats in a row and relegated to Division 3, but that's not the worst of it all. I think they played with, there was no spirit, no aggression, no intensity in their game, but the biggest thing was their skill execution, and a lot like their hand passing, their shooting was just appalling. And I'm surprised at it because Colm Nelly is in there as a former Dub, who's a brilliant skills coach. So you'd be hoping that they went to photo, as Reggie said there, they're reset. I'm sure they're hoping for that, and they're going to have a hard battle today, because that was a brilliant win for Wicklow last week, because we would have won if we talked about this last week, Sean, we would be tipping Westmeath in a huge way after the performance in the league. So you know, Wicklow played with great aggression. They got stuck in, they harassed, they tackled, and then they got some good scores as well, so they'll be on a high. But I just have that feeling that Kildare are just waiting to get one win, and that could change their season. I'm sure the lads are hoping that as well, but there's so much talent down there. I mean, they're after winning two All-Ireland under-21s in the last few years, so the talent has to be there. But Sean, when you're losing games, you know yourself, the confidence just dips and dips and dips, so they need one win. This could be a hard battle today, but I do think Kildare will win it.
Yeah, and it is sad on poor old Glenn Ryan, who was a great servant of Kildare football, to be going through what he's going through, because I remember when Kildare beat Dublin in two Leinster finals, it was one of them he was injured for, and he was still probably man of the match.
He was an unbelievable player, but like, look at the players he has with him. But then it just shows you, you know, that being great players doesn't mean that you're going to be a great manager or whatever. But I just think the confidence is gone. And as you know, being involved with teams, once your confidence goes and you lose games, it's a really hard position to be in. But just that one win could spark something in that team, because I do think there's talent there. So I'd say Glenn is hoping that as well. And as you say, for the likes of Glenn Ryan, Dermot Hurley, Anthony Rainbow, Johnny Doyle, these fellas were unbelievable for Kildare. So they are going through a hard time. So hopefully for them. But having said that, fair play to Wicklow. We better say that for Reggie. He became nice if we don't. But a huge performance from them the last day. And you know, to beat Westmeath, that's a huge performance, because Westmeath, although down in the lower division, were playing a lot better than Kildare have been playing in the league.
I suppose the next one, I mean, Offaly Leash would be mouth-watering going back 10 and 20 years, because Offaly would be probably champions, and Leash had their days as well. Declan Kelly, you know, will he restore any pride in the Offaly jersey in this game against Leash?
Well, no better man than Declan to have a right go at it. He's been involved with their under-20s when they won All-Ireland. So, he'd be pushing it hard. I think Offaly haven't beaten the Leash Championships since 2002. Which is a long time. And absolutely. But looking at it, Justin McNulty is back in with Leash, and he did a great job the last time he was there. Now they're getting better and better again. We saw a huge performance for them in the league final, where they won that league final and got promotion as well, and played great football, particularly up front, like Evan O'Carroll at full forward, Paul Kingston, Mark Barry, really good forwards. So, I'd be tipping Leash for it today, because they're coming with confidence into the game. But as you said, Declan is a great operator, and he will have Offaly primed for it. But I just think, you know, the way Leash are going, the way they went in Croke Park in that league final. But having said that, Westmeath went well in the league final
true,
as well, and we know
true.
What happens. But these are local, these are real neighbours, and they'll get stuck into it. But I do fancy Leash for it.
They surely. And the real big game, I suppose, mouth-watering, Dublin versus Meath. When I grew up, there were, you know, if you beat Meath and you got a really good Leinster final, you had a great chance of winning an All-Ireland. Obviously, the structures have all changed. But, you know, Dublin without Brian Fenton, Colm O'Rourke, and the Meath dressing room with all this experience, I mean, how will this go?
I talked to a former Meath footballer last night, Sean, and he said to me, if we stay within 10 points of them, we'll be doing well. And I think Dublin will win this game well, and I think they will have learned an awful lot from the Derry game, and not even learned an awful lot. They know enough about themselves at this stage, but that was a kick in the pants for them, really, to be honest with you. And you can see what they have done. They've brought back Paddy Gilroy is back. He can't play, but he's on the sideline. He's a really good operator with the lads. And then you see Cluxton, Fitzsimons, McCarthy, all these guys back in the panel again for this. So this is serious. This is serious business. And I think the big thing, if you look at it, in the subs as well, you have Cormac Costello and Paul Mannion. Now, if they came in on any forward line, they would make such a huge difference. But having said that, I can't see Meath. I've seen them train in Sean a good bit. Train really hard. They have a great pride in that Meath jersey. But as Callum says, and I think he's dead right, the Meath public have to have patience. He's building something. He's building it. Unfortunately, they have to go into Croke Park tomorrow and take on Dublin, which is a hard task for any team in the country. Hope Meath will put on a huge performance. There's always great spirit and determination in Meath. Hoping they're putting on, they put on a big performance. I think even everybody in Dublin is hoping that there's going to be a big challenge. I doubt it. I think they're very young. They're learning, and I think you have to have patience with them.
Yeah, and I suppose we'll cover the last Leinster Championship one quickly before we'll just get your prediction on Ulster. Ger Brennan's Louth versus John Hegarty's Wexford.
Yeah, I tell you, Wexford, they were very unlucky not to get promotion. They're putting on huge scores. I think the last day against Carlow, they scored. They beat them by something like 23 points. So they're going really well. John has them going well. But look, Loud, I saw Loud playing the other night against Roscommon. Was impressed with them. And I think, you know, with Mulroy and Downey and Grimes and Dornan in the middle of the field, that they'll push on. I think they're on a mission, and I think they'll win that game.
That's a great analysis of the Leinster Championship. And your quick predictions then, Armagh are playing Fermanagh in Brewster Park. That's on Sunday. Kieran McGeaney's team, how do you see that one going?
I think we've talked about this for a long time. I'm just thinking that Armagh, I'm waiting for Armagh to really come. And I think the firepower that they have up front, and I've said this to you a few times here, Grugan, Mullen, Connolly is coming out. And I think if they play their best forward line, they improved immensely in the league final when they brought on Soupy Campbell, who made a huge difference, and Reno Neal. If they use that forward line and there's a little bit of cutting in the forward line, I can't see Armagh or Fermanagh beating them, to be honest with you. But I do think that Fermanagh will certainly not lie down and will have a right go at it. But Sean, the league tables don't lie either, you know what I mean? Armagh are up at the top.
Yeah, and just briefly and very last one, Conor Lafferty home, Newry against Andy McEntee's Antrim. Surely there's only going to be one winner there, Brian.
Well, last year in the league, Sean, they played, and it was Antrim can't understand how they lost that game. It was 218 to 217. So they're local neighbours as well.
Yeah.
I've been tipping down, and I've liked what I've seen from down all year. Disappointed with them in the league final, but I think they'll have learned from that. Game is in Newry as well, so I think you'll see Down coming out in the end because they have a better depth in their panel as well.
Trying to get a hold of Alan Cawley at the moment. In the meantime, Sean Lane is still in studio here with me as we look back on the week's football. I suppose the Champions League, Sean, was the one that, you know, during the week, in particular, watching that one, absolutely fantastic games. The Arsenal game, 2-2 draw for them, of course, and then the City game was the highlight, a 3-3 draw in that one. Did you get to see any of that yourself?
I actually, Reggie, I'd have to say I love the knockout stages of the Champions League. I watched Arteta's Arsenal at home to Tuchel, who's on savage pressure in Bayern Munich. He's going the end of the season. Arsenal took a great lead, but you know, Bayern got two cracking goals, and next thing Arsenal had to fight really, really hard and got a great equaliser. The standard, Reggie, of the game was incredible, and I'm looking forward to the replay. I think that's on Tuesday night. The other one was a real And you like the pun, Real Madrid. It was a real cracker. Ancelotti's Real Madrid 3, Pep Guardiola's Manchester City 3. But the standard of the goals, Reggie, I mean, I heard you saying earlier that if the ball came across that 99 times out of 100, he'd miss it. I'm not too sure he'd have missed it 199 times, but not, maybe but you and me would. But there were crackers of goals, and Foden got an absolute cracker of a goal in the top corner as well, like, you know.
Yeah, and Vinicius Junior's assist for that one. I mean, the crossover, everybody thought it was going to go the standard cross into the box, but he pulled it back against himself at a diagonal angle so that Valverde could get that strike on it. The quality of football, like, I mean, you know, some of those Champions League games can be boring enough to watch. You know, they're kind of like going through the motion. But both of those games, but in particular the quality of football in that City game, and I think in particular City, the fact that they went down 2-1 and the resilience to come back. I thought at 3-2 they were going to hold on, but it took a moment of genius from Valverde to get that goal to change.
Absolutely,
was. But of course, League of Ireland as well on at the moment, and it's funny. I was talking to Alan Cawley last week about how the league is going, and we were just saying how there's a little bit of we weren't expecting Shelburne to be in the position they were in. Actually, I think we have Alan Cawley on the line now. I'll go to Alan. Alan, how are you? Are you well? You know, we don't seem to have him there at the moment. But yeah, no, I was talking to Alan about it last week and just saying how the Shelburne were in such a good position at such an early stage in the league. But Shamrock Rovers were the ones that we were expecting to be in that top position. But again, as they say, a week is a long time in sport. And the whole thing changed on its head again last night. And Shelburne went down 2-1 to Bowes, which was a bit of a strange result.
They were at home, Reggie, and yeah. I watched the whole game. And do you know what? They were very, very good earlier on. And Damien Duff would be happy with the way they played. But they just turned over two goals. They got a penalty to make it 2-1. Even after going to 2-1, they still had 20-25 minutes left. They never really threatened the Bowes goal with clear-cut chance. There was one that they probably should have put away. It was a save and a rebound. But on the night, the better team won. The big game then from Rovers' perspective, Rovers are kind of, they didn't hit the form that we expected them to. But they came out last night and beat Sligo at home 3-0. So with Shells losing and them winning 3-0, all of a sudden Rovers are really back into the race now for the title, albeit early days.
Absolutely, and the league table is looking like Shelburne have 21 points, but Rovers have moved up to third position with that game in hand. They're on 15 points, so I mean there's absolutely nothing in it. You would have expected them to get that result against Sligo because Sligo are going well this season, but you just would always expect that they would get that. But I saw Damien Duff was interviewed as well, and you get the feeling with him that he realises there are going to be bumps in the road. While very disappointed with that result, he's just going to, like, that's the first league defeat there, and as he says himself, they need to hit the reset button and just go back and focus on a week to week rather than thinking too far ahead.
Yeah, and there's a comparison here, and I watched just the management styles of Arteta last year when things weren't going. I know you follow Arsenal, Reggie, that when things weren't going well for Arteta last year, he used to have his heart in his sleeve and he'd be throwing tantrums on the line, and he's got a little bit of coaching on that. I think Damien Duff might need a little bit of that kind of an advanced kind of thought process as of when things are going wrong. I mean, if you're going wrong, things are going wrong and you're kind of losing it on the line, and I'm not suggesting he's losing it now, but he's very, really upbeat. That can also get into the players on the field where they don't take the risks and they don't pass the ball to feet. They have a tendency, I'm going to get rid of it today. And so look at all to play for in the League of Ireland. It's a great league. Damien Duff was the one, he was interviewed, he said it's the best league in the world. I'm not sure he's right, but I'll tell you what he thinks it is, and he's given it everything, and it's great for Irish football.
Yeah, and the other one as well, of course, was Bowes, where with the change of manager, so Alan Reynolds is in there now, and he's only 3 weeks, I think, since
great
he took
pedigree,
charge.
Yeah.
But to get that result from a Bowes perspective, with the change of guard and the response from the players, exactly what they would have wanted,
Yeah, absolutely. And he's only there 2 games. Now, you'd have to say, I watched the first game he was in charge. They were away to Rovers, which was another Dublin derby. Now, Rovers were by far the better team on the night. It was last Friday, and you'd be very disappointed. But he's only there a couple of weeks. He's after picking them up in the week. He's obviously had a chat with them. He's worked on a few things in training. And he delivered a performance last night where he beat the team that is, 6 points clear in the league. So, he's great pedigree as well, Reggie, with a lot of League of Ireland teams. So I see that they'll be very, very happy. And if you were to ask the Bowes supporters which game they would like to have won, of course they'd like to have won the two, but they'd prefer to have bet Shelburne, who are top of the table, because they'd be near neighbours, and Talca Park and Dalymount Park aren't a million miles away.
Absolutely, yeah. There's always good rivalry there. Derry City, they slipped up. They were 2-1 ahead of Drogheda United for the best part of the game, but then of course a late France Pirro goal for the Drogs denied them that chance. Derry, a team who, I've spoken to Alan about this as well, they're sitting in second position, but yeah, to let that slip, you know, and only get a point from that game would be hugely disappointing for them against a Drogheda team who are pretty much second from the bottom in the table. So a lost opportunity there for Derry.
Yeah, and Reggie, there's a catalyst of all of these. It seems to be every year they seem to be thereabouts and they slip up against teams that would they be expected to win. The last League of Ireland game I was at was last year. It was Derry were playing Rovers in Talla, and Derry were on a crest of a wave and they were flying and Rovers were flying as well, but Rovers put them to sleep fairly quickly and fairly early on the night. But you are right, I mean, you know, Derry, when they play in the Brandywell, they certainly should be winning all their games, but slipping up against Drogheda, if you have ambitions, Reggie, to win the League of Ireland, you know, and particularly with three points for a win and only one for a draw, you're dropping 2 points, not just one, so they can't afford that.
Yeah, and then of course Dundalk played out a nil-all draw with St. Pat's, which will be hugely disappointing for St. Pat's. Dundalk getting rid of their manager Stephen O'Donnell on Monday. You know, they probably would have been expected to lose that game against St. Pat's, and Pat's will probably see it as one that they let slip. But I think Dundalk would have taken a draw all day long in that match.
Absolutely, Reggie. They've some awful form, as you say. They've parted company with their manager, but Pat's will be really, really disappointed because last week Pat's, as you know, beat Shamrock Rovers. So you know, which kind of kept them in the race, and it also was very helpful for Shelbourne, who slipped up. So look, the League of Ireland, it's a very competitive league, Reggie, and it seems to me that, okay, rather than having 14 or 15 teams in it, there's 10, and it almost, bar we'll say one or two, there's 7 or 8 teams there, particularly home and away, they all seem to be capable of beating one another, which is going to lead to hopefully a fantastic finish.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's no doubt about it. Pats will rue that slip up. That would have put them on 16 points, the same as Derry, who are in second position at the moment where the results worked out. So a missed opportunity for them. But as you said, Sean, no doubt about it, the competition really hitting up in that league, and a very competitive league, which is what we wanted. And there'll be charges, no doubt, from the likes of Rovers, and Bowes will continue to make runs. Derry, Shelbourne will probably get back on the horse as well. So a really competitive league, and look forward to seeing how all of that unfolds.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.